JC Corcoran Podcast.
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Thursday, April 21st, 2022, 210 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. How you doing, kids? It's JC here at jcontheline.com. Hopefully we will not have sonic booms today. That's what people thought they were hearing across primarily St. Louis City and a little bit in South County and definitely Metro East. 9 o'clock in the morning and 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Kaboom! People are like, what the hell was that? You know, with what's going on in the world right now, that might not be the best thing to do. Well, it turns out it was our friends at Ameren again. Ameren was, imploding some buildings or something, and they were using explosives to do it. And everybody across the area was like, well, what the hell was that? And Ameren, of course, is standing there going, well, we told everybody. Yeah. How come nobody knew? We called some people and told them we were going to do it. How come nobody knew? Let me just say, as long as that Tom Voss is running Ameren, it is going to continue to be one of the most arrogant public utility operations in the world. And I'll just leave it at that. How do we feel about the Keith Hernandez bobblehead on April 26th? Okay. He of the Bolivian marching powder. Let me tell you, I've told this story maybe one or two other times, but I think it was a long time ago. So I had a really good friend who was coming up in the hotel industry. And when you train to be in the hotel industry, I guess what they do is they say, all right, come on in. And this week, you're going to do this. You're going to work in food service. And then next week, you're going to work the front desk. And then the following week, you're going to work in hospitality. And then the next week, you're going to work in the cafeteria. And then when I say cafeteria, I mean like the stuff like the breakfast food in the morning when they have those continental breakfasts. And then the next week, you're going to work in the restaurant. And then the next week, you're going to work in room service. So what you do is you get a very well-rounded experience and education that presumably as you get into hotel management, as you sort of climb the corporate ladder, you go, okay, I know what that problem is because, you know, for a week I did that. I know exactly what the guy's talking about. So let's arrange to have those carts that we do the room service on. Let's have those rounded up because we were running out of them. And so let's, you know, so you sort of familiarize yourself in the areas of problem solving for anybody running a big hotel. So I had a friend, female, attractive, and this was back in the middle 1980s after Keith Hernandez had been traded to the New York Mets. And the Mets were in town, and as fate would have it, she was working room service that week, and they sent her to Keith Hernandez's room to deliver his meal, and he opened the door, and I'm just going to stop the story right there because I don't want to get sued, but just imagine what must have been going on in there for me, J.C. Corcoran, to actually self-censor myself, okay? So it must have been pretty bad, huh? So she's told me that story. She told me that story years ago, and I still laugh about it. And then as the story goes, back when he was still with the Cardinals, there might have been some issue with regard to the transmission of a social disease from a baseball player to the baseball player's wife. There may have been a situation like that, which caused the wife, obviously, to have a visceral reaction to all that. And then as the story goes, you know, you have your walk-up music when you, you know, you come to the plate and they always play your song, whatever it is. He had this brilliant idea to say, all right, from now on, when I walk up there, I want you to play the Four Seasons song, Working My Way Back to You, Babe. And then when she's watching the game, and this is how delusional Hernandez was. He's imagining that he's in the throes of a big breakup, and all she's probably thinking is, how much am I going to get? And how soon can we wrap this up so I can get the hell away from this guy? But in Keith Hernandez's mind, she's sitting there watching the game and watching him hit and noticing what the walk-up music is. And do I have more? Oh, just trust me on this. I have plenty more, but we're going to just leave it at that. So, I don't know. They say time heals. Well, there's people who did me wrong 40, 50 years ago that I still, there's a guy from high school. I didn't go to my high school reunion a couple of years ago because I knew that if he was there, I'd kill him. And if you're thinking, JC, it sounds like you're serious, like you'd really kill him. Yeah, I would. And if you're thinking, well, you know, that sounds sort of dangerous. Yeah, it is. But if I told you what he did, you'd probably say, okay, what time do you want me there? I'll go with you and I'll help you kill him. Moral of the story, don't judge until you've gotten all the details. All right. One of our listeners, Diane, her cousin, went to Sunday's Cardinal game and ended up testing positive for COVID yesterday. This is not over. I told you a long time ago, that if I were you, I would not throw out my mask. I was at Costco yesterday and same thing. Oh, here is Ira DeWitt, the wife of Bill DeWitt. Hold on here. Where is she? Right here.
Holy Catholic upbringing. I'm like, I want to give her hope because, like, she was well-to-do family. I'm like, don't want to give her a casserole or flowers. I want to give her hope. So I went to Catholic Supply, and I was like, I want to get a really cool prayer candle by now.
Okay, I had about enough of her. You ought to see some of the stuff that Bill DeWitt's wife posts on Facebook. You ought to see some of the stuff. Let's just say she might be mildly disconnected with the rest of the community. Her attitude seems to be, I'm rich, I'm very, very Republican, deal with it, fuckheads. Now you throw the Catholic thing in there, that's perfect, perfect. She's trying to hit the trifecta with me. Where were you in 1990 on this date? Perhaps at the old arena watching the Eric Clapton concert and being very, very disappointed because even though Eric Clapton went on tour in 1990 and said, now here's the thing, I'm coming to your town, but we're not going to be doing Derek and the Domino songs. We're not going to be doing Cream songs. This is a blues tour, okay? We're going to be playing the blues. So don't buy a ticket unless you want to hear an evening of blues music. And so people filled the arena that night and then booed when he didn't play any songs that they knew. 2008 on this date, I saw one of the funniest movies I have ever seen. I've probably watched it, seriously, maybe 30 times over the years. Came out in 2008. The movie is called Baby Mama. And if I told you, there was a movie produced by Lorne Michaels that starred Steve Martin, Tina Fey, Greg Kinnear, Romany Malco, who I think is one of the funniest people I have ever seen in my life. He was the black guy who worked at the electronics store in The 40-Year-Old Virgin. God, this guy is funny in this movie. Oh, and did I mention Amy Poehler is in it too? And she is fantastic. This movie is called Baby Mama, and I love every frame of this film. Now, initially, I thought to myself, well, you just really like this movie because it came out while my wife was pregnant at the time with Francesca. And so, you know, I was just a real sap. I was a real pushover. You put a movie out like that, and it's like, oh, yeah, it's so cute. But I've watched that movie enough times at points in my life where nobody in the home was pregnant. It's a damn good movie. Rent that sometime if you get a chance. I'm only going to mention this once and then move on because otherwise we're going to be here until 2 o'clock this afternoon with me telling stories about the movie Field of Dreams, which was released on this date back in 1989. And we just heard a bunch of stuff on that with regard to the opening day show. So I'll just sort of move on from there. We'll talk about it in depth some other day, perhaps. And one of the great stories I have in terms of my personal career occurred on this date back in 1981. I'll tell you very briefly. I'm in Omaha, Nebraska. I am doing various shows, sometimes the midday show, sometimes afternoon, sometimes mornings at WOW Radio in Omaha, Nebraska. This is Johnny Carson's old station. Okay, so I'm up there, and I become friends with the most popular media personality in Omaha at that time in 1981, Dr. Dave Iser. Dr. Dave Iser was the meteorologist at the NBC affiliate in Omaha, and he and I became friends. Long story made short, an opening pops up for a weekend weather forecaster. He says, oh, you could do this. You could ace this. I put on my suit and tie. I went down to the station. I cut the audition tape, nailed it, hit it out of the park. He's like, oh, yeah, you got this. This is great. 2 weeks later, Dr. Dave Iser announces he is leaving for Chicago, WLS-TV, Channel 7, in the Windy City. The TV station, upon hearing this news, decides to completely realign its on-air staff, and my weekend weather position was eliminated before I ever got a chance to get the job. I'm sitting there going, what the hell just happened? I had a chance at being the weekend weather forecaster, and it just slipped through my hands, but it was pretty early on in my career. A lot of that kind of stuff happened in subsequent years, but that was the first big one. You know, when you're a young broadcaster, you know, I was probably about 23 at the time. Something like that happens, and you're like, wait a minute. All right, birthdays today. Tony Romo, retired Dallas quarterback, 42. Rob Riggle, he used to be on Saturday Night Live, The Daily Show, and he played the cop who tasered Zach Galifianakis' face in The Hangover. And he's 52 today. Andy McDowell, that's a handsome female. Groundhog Day, 4 weddings and a funeral, 64. Tony Danza, hold me closer, Tony Danza, 71 today. Iggy Pop, 75. It was 42 years ago today, 1980, that the Boston Marathon was run. And the first woman to cross the finish line was somebody that nobody ever heard of before. She didn't even have a runner's body. People were like, who the hell are you? And she said, my name is Rosie Ruiz. Yeah, she took the subway, started the race, got on the subway to the end of the race, and then crossed the finish line. And people were like, Somebody with chubby thighs that we've never seen before just won the Boston Marathon in record time. We think something might be up here. Yes, that's correct. She was disqualified. Prince died from an accidental overdose of fentanyl on this date 6 years ago. He was 57. And Vern Troyer committed suicide on this date in 2018. He was 49. That was the midget, little person, whatever we're supposed to be calling people with that condition. But if you're Mike Myers, you're like, right there. That's the guy I want for my movie.
Now the stretch. Ready, everybody standing up. The pitch. A high pop foul. The Cardinals there. The Cardinals won the pennant. The Cardinals won the pennant. The Cardinals won the pennant. Everybody out. Johnny. Everybody congratulating everybody. I don't know if they'll ever get here. I don't know if they'll ever get here. The Cardinals have just won the pennant. Mayhem on the field. Joe Schultz. Congratulations. Hey, Ray Washburn. Bob Skinner.
Final out of the regular season, 1964, the St. Louis Cardinals in a new book called 64 Cardinals, a Team, a Season, and a Showdown for the Ages, co-written by our pal Ron Jacober, is out there and available for purchase right now. And Ron joins us now on the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jconline.com. Ron, tell me about your life in 1964, separate from baseball.
Boy, it was totally different than it is now in so many ways. All the communication stuff available now. Computers. There was no such thing as a computer back then. And life was just a lot simpler, I think. People are so occupied with cell phones and being online and stuff. I think life was a lot simpler. But my dad would bring me down, me and my brothers, maybe twice a year if we were lucky, once a year, most years, to a Cardinal game. And that was such a big deal. Now, of course, you can get there in a few minutes. But life was just a lot simpler in those days, JC, I think. And I'm not sure it wasn't better.
And when did you make your first foray officially into broadcasting? And how did it lead you to the time that I met you for the first time, which was when you were the sportscaster? I don't know if you were sports director at Channel 5 back in 1984. How did that circuitous route take you there?
I had a journalism degree from college. From SIU Carbondale. I thought I'd be a writer. And my first job out of college and out of the Army was in public relations at the Auto Club of Missouri, AAA. And I was a young brat, and in the fall, we would go to radio stations with a public service campaign, Schools Open, Drive Safely. And I was calling on the general manager at WIBV in Belleville. And I had a 1 1-hour course in broadcasting in college just as a lark. He said, "How would you like a part-time job?" I said, "When?" He said, "How about tonight?" So I wound up working weekends at WIPV in Belleville. But after a couple of years with two little kids at home, I said, you know, I told Lois, maybe I better knock this off. And about that time, Bob Hardy, the legendary news guy at KMOX, was living in that area. And he called me and said, "Ron, we're looking for a part-time weekender at KMOX. Would you be interested?" I was like God calling me. Oh, my God, yes. So we'll come over and cut a tape. So I went over and cut a tape. And they hired me. But I'm back to weekends again. But it was KMOX. It wasn't WIBV. But I was a gopher there. I was a staff announcer in those days. But I wasn't getting anywhere. I did a little Billiken basketball with Jay Randolph. Well, Jay had left to go to Channel 5. He said, "Oh, my God, we're looking to hire another sports guy here at Channel 5, and I'd love to have you. When can you come over and cut an audition?" I said, "Well, you tell me." He said, "How about 10:30 tonight?" So I went over after the 10 o'clock news, sat down in front of a camera, did a sportscast, and they hired me the next day. I spent 18 years at Channel 5 until we had a general manager named Bill Bolser, who came in when the station was sold and wanted me to be the new Zipper Zeppa. And I told him, "I can't do that. I got 17 years of credibility and blood on the floor here." And he pounded his desk and said, "Well, I'll find somebody who will." So that's how that ended. And make a long story short, I wound up back at KMOX. Bob Hyland hired me back, which he only did two or three times, I guess, in his whole lifetime. And so I spent 27 years there, including 20 plus years as the as a sports director at KMOX, but it was not in my plan at all when I got out of college. I thought I would just write, and I love to write, but I thought that was what I would do.
All right, the book is called 64 Cardinals, a team, a season, and a showdown for the ages. Familiarize me, please, with the co-author of this book, Robert Thiemann. I'm not aware of him. Who is he, and why should we know his name?
You shouldn't know his name, really. He's a retired banker who is a statistical geek. I call him that. He's been a member of SABRE, Society of American Baseball Research, for 40 years, and he's a honcho with them.
You know, people talk about the 64 Cardinals and have this really flowery memory of the whole thing. What people forget is there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, people being threatened with their jobs, people feeling like they were double-crossed. There was chaos amongst the organization in 1964. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, the Cardinals have won 11 World Championships. This is just one of them. But what made this season so unique was everything that went on, both on the field, but especially off the field. Gussie Bush was the honcho. He was the owner, along with Anheuser-Busch, of course. And Gussie didn't know much about baseball, but he knew about failure. And he thought the team was failing under Bing Devine, the general manager. Devine made one of the best trades in Cardinal history on June 5th of 64 at the trading deadline, acquiring Lou Brock from the Chicago Cubs. But it didn't hurt at that on that day because they thought they got the Cardinals on that day. You know, when you send your best pitcher up there for this kid that you weren't sure he could play very much. But Bing Devine, the team was under 500 at the All-Star break. So Gussie was impatient, and he fired the general manager, Bing Devine. He had hired legendary Branch Rickey as a consultant. Now, Rickey was 80 years old at the time, but he came in, and he and Devine didn't get along at all. We believe that that's the reason Gussie fired Devine. Branch Rickey thought it was a good idea. Gussie was going to fire Johnny Keene, also the manager. And Branch Rickey, we believe, talked him out of that, saying, wait till the end of the season. You can't fire both of them during the year. The Cardinals were 11 games out with 39 games to play. They were under 500 at the All-Star break, by the way. 11 games out with 39 to play, and they won it all. Came down to the last weekend of the season, and it could have been a three-way tie between the Cardinals, the Phillies, and the Cincinnati Reds. So it came down to the last day of the season, and the Cardinals had to win it to win the pennant, go to the World Series, and they did. Gussie Bush heard an interview Harry Carey did with Leo DeRocher during the season, and Leo wasn't managing anywhere. He was working for another club. Gussie was enthralled by him, so he convinced Harry, or he told Harry, to secretly bring Leo DeRocher to St. Louis and take him secretly to Grant's Farm. So Harry did that, but wasn't involved in the meeting. He had to sit in his car for about 2 hours. After this meeting between Leo DeRocher and Gussie Bush, Gussie said, you're my next manager. Don't worry about the money. We'll figure that out. So he was going to fire Johnny Keene and hire Leo DeRocher. Well, there's no crying in baseball. There's no secrets in baseball either. And Johnny Keene found out about it. Well, now they wound up winning the pennant, so Gussie couldn't fire him. So Bush showed up offering Johnny Keene a new contract, and Keene said, well, let's wait till the end of the World Series, till it's all over, and then we'll talk about it, because he knew what he was going to do. So the Cardinals called a news conference after the World Series to announce a new contract for manager Johnny Keene with the Rays, and Keene handed Gussie his resignation that he had written in September and walked away, and a week later he was the manager of the Yankees because the Yankees had fired Yogi Berra, who was their manager in the World Series, and they hired Johnny Keene. So it's stuff like that that happened off the field in 64 that makes it such an intriguing season.
I'm picturing you as a young man, your 20s, and when you were hanging out with, especially maybe on road trips and during playoffs and stuff, when the local stations send the announcers on the road, you got a chance to see guys like Gibson and Brock, who are legends. They are icons. But when you were just a kid and following these guys around, also in their 20s and 30s, did you have any sense for the idea that maybe 40, 50 years later, you'd still be talking about these guys and that they would be held in such high esteem as they are now?
Absolutely not. There was no possible way I could even think about anything like that. But I think one of the other things that I'm kind of fascinated with in terms of 64, was what the black players went through, the prejudices that they experienced. I used to host a post-game show on KMOX with Bob Gibson after Cardinal baseball for a couple of years, and our conversations off the air were more interesting and intriguing and almost insulting than everything happening on the air. When he showed up as a rookie in St. Petersburg, went to the team hotel to check in, and the desk clerk said, no, you can't stay here, and gave the cab instructions where to take him to the, quote, Negro side of town. All the black players had to stay in a rooming house on the other side of town. His second year, he noticed that some of the players brought their families to spring training, so he had a couple little kids. So he was driving from Omaha to St. Petersburg, and he said it was the worst drive you can possibly imagine because we could get gas, but nobody would let us use restrooms. And we'd have to try to find the Negro side of town to find something to eat and a place to stay. So it's stories like that. It's stunning. Bill White was drafted or signed by the San Francisco Giants and assigned to the Carolina League. He said not only, and I talked to all these guys, by the way, the living players, which made this book so much fun for me. He said I was not only just the only black player on the team, I was the only black player in the league. And they let me know about it. Those days in St. Petersburg, the Cardinals and the Yankees both trained there in those days. And the Chamber of Commerce made a big deal every spring with a big luncheon. Baseball is back. We salute baseball. But they only invited the white players. And Bill White made some mention or complained to a sports writer about that. Well, it wound up in the Globe Democrat here in St. Louis. White says, when are they going to realize we're human beings and treat us that way? Well, the Globe suggested because Gussie Bush had to be complacent with this, he didn't change anything or stand up for the black players. And the Globe suggested people boycott Budweiser. I don't know what Gussie's feelings about race were, but he realized he has a problem. So he convinced a friend of his to buy a big motel in St. Petersburg so the black players and the white players and their families could stay together. And even stars like, this is 62, 63, before 64, stars like Musial and Kenny Boyer, they had their own places down there, but they moved into the motel to stay with all the players, so the whole team was there and their families. And Bill White told me, he said, you got to understand, Ron, this is in the Deep South. People would drive past that motel and couldn't believe their eyes to tell black kids and white kids in the same swimming pool. And he said, I said, were you the most integrated team in baseball then? He said, yeah, probably so, because of that motel situation. We all stayed together. We all rode to the ballpark on the same bus, and we became very good friends. And the wives there barbecued outside all the time. So it's stuff like that that made 64 interesting to me, and I would hope to people that were not aware of that or were not alive then. But that was in my lifetime that these players had to go through that. Lou Brock experienced the same thing.
And as you mentioned, Branch Rickey was part of the administrative team for the Cardinals in 64, so some of this was going on right under his nose, and as we all know, that it was Branch Rickey who introduced the first black player, Jackie Robinson, into the major league. So I'm wondering if he maybe had something to say about that move by August Bush.
He could very well have been, JC. Could very well have been. Gussie wanted him to take over as general manager. And he said, no, I'm too old. I can't do that. He wouldn't do that. But you're probably right about that. Hadn't thought of that angle. But, Branch Rickey is a hero to the black players in Major League Baseball for what he did.
So you just figure the average age of the average fan in the ballpark, a Saturday night game at Busch Stadium, you know, you have the expensive seats and the older people down in the field box. A lot of those people have had those season tickets in their families for years and years and years, generations in some cases. And then you go on the upper deck and it's all kids. So if you round it out, maybe the average age of the average fan in the ballpark is about 30. So now assuming you're about 10 years old when you really become a baseball fan, that means that average 30-year-old person in the bleachers these days means that they didn't become a fan until 2002. That means on any given night, half of the stadium is filled up with people who never saw Ozzie Smith play a game in their lives.
You're right.
Now, one of the things that means is that you and I are both older than we thought we were. But the other thing you're putting out a book about 1964, and it's like, wow, I mean, there's an educational process here because there's so much information in here that people who say they're lifelong Cardinal baseball fans, but they don't know anything about this stuff that's all in this book.
Absolutely, they wouldn't. And that's one reason why we did it. It's fun to do. I love to write. And it's published by Reedy Press, which is a St. Louis company. They've got about 150 titles out there. Not too many sports books, to tell you the truth. But they did a great job in finding the photographs for this thing. I mean, it's full of beautiful pictures and things. But you're right. I mean, someone 40 years old would have no idea what 64 is about. That's why we're hoping that they will check this book out. They'll probably make a great Father's Day, Mother's Day.
I was just saying that this morning. It's perfect. You know, if you don't spend $40 on Dad on Father's Day, well, then you need to reevaluate your life. And so let's talk about that. 64 Cardinals, a team, a season, and a showdown for the ages. For people who want to grab the book, what's the best way to do it?
Well, it's available wherever you can get good books. Barnes & Noble, we had a book signing there. We had a book signing at a place called Christopher's in Kirkwood. It's available on Amazon. Any place you can buy good books, that's where it's available. It's only been out a few days, so there may be some bookstores that don't have them yet, but I think if they don't, they'll get them very soon. But we're proud of it. It's really a neat book, and I tell people, you got to hold it with both hands. It's that heavy.
I've written two books, and I was doing a book signing back in the early part of the 2000s. And, you know, people sometimes use an opportunity like that to come and see you, to tell you how much that you have meant to them over the years. You know, I've been listening to you since I was a kid and all that sort of stuff. And sometimes they will, as you know, bring you gifts or just little mementos or something that they would like to present to you. So I'm sitting there, and a guy walks up to me, never seen the guy in my life, and he hands me a baseball that is in one of those protective cases, and he hands it to me, and he said, "This is for you." And I think, "Oh, well, thank you." And I look at it, and it's a baseball autographed by Ted Williams.
Oh my gosh.
So I say to the guy, "Oh my God, I mean, I really appreciate this, but I can't accept this. I really can't accept this." He goes, no, I want you to have it. And I said, "Okay, well, let me get your name, because on Monday morning I want to go on the air and I at least would like to thank you in some way, shape, or form. What's your name?" And he says, "Ted Williams." He'd signed the ball himself.
That is an incredible story, JC. Oh, my God. I didn't know you were going there. That was really funny.
64 Cardinals, a team, a season, and a showdown for the ages. Perfect for Father's Day and for any Cardinal baseball fan or anybody who just wants to know what the world was like back then. Some great storytelling from Ron Jacober, who is enjoying, I assume, retirement, semi-retirement. What do you call it?
Well, I call it being very busy, but not getting paid much for anybody. I'm involved with a lot of stuff. St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame, the famous 1-2-3 Club. I'm president of that now. I do a lot of work with the Knights of Columbus at our church and write books. And I've been awfully busy, busier than I think I would want to. I want to be, but it continues. So I think it keeps you alive. Keeps the brain working, which is, I think, why I do it all.
All right, go out and grab the book. Ron Jacober, great to hear your voice. Glad to see that you're staying busy. And again, people will grab this book, 64 Cardinals, a team, a season, and a showdown for the ages. Ron, be well. We'll see you out at the ballpark soon.
JC, love talking to you. Thank you.
Talking baseball in St. Louis. Talking baseball in St. Louis.
Everything Ron Jacober, and I'm serious, this is a great book for any sort of Cardinal fan, particularly if you start looking at dads and granddads and things like that, uncles. You got something in mind for Father's Day? You don't yet? Well, here we go. There's your book, 64 Cardinals, a team, a season, and a showdown for the ages. You will not be disappointed, by the way. This thing is really, really well put together. All right, that's it. We're done. The Thursday, April 21st, 2022 edition of the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jcontheline.com is in the can. 210 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. We are here every weekday morning a little bit after 7 o'clock with a brand new podcast every day. Everything is archived, so you can go back and binge them if you need to. Email me, JC at jcontheline.com. Facebook, the Showgram. With J.C. Corcoran. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.